My lowest point in the race, when I did consider, can I carry on, I switched my phone on, and I've just had two grandchildren, twins, and they came up on the screen, and I just thought, who wants a granddad is a failure. And it does give you a real shot in the arm. And then of a night in camp, you get messages that the people who are back home are sending through to you. And I had so many messages saying so many things that I didn't think were deserved. I just think, how can you let them down? How can you go back and say, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't finish? And I suppose the third bit is, there's just something in me that I never give up. I don't know what it is. It's if I could bottle it, I'd be a millionaire. But I think if you've got that inner drive, it's just something that keeps you going.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast. My name's Craig Lewis, and the voice that you just heard was that of Nigel Watson, who Michelle and I met while doing a spot of parkrun tourism at the Arrow Valley Parkrun last weekend. Nigel was introduced to us by a mutual friend and a two-time podcast guest, Doug Richards, whose story I would 100% recommend you go back and check out if you love hearing about everything from extreme challenges, running all over the world, to all things parkrun. Nigel met Doug when he was planning to run the Marathon de Saab, the legendary multi-day 250-kilometre race through the Sahara Desert, which Doug himself had previously finished. It came at a challenging time for Nigel, an experienced runner who'd previously run a host of marathons and even competed for Great Britain in the triathlon for his age group. That's because Nigel had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer, news he was determined wouldn't stop him. I spoke to Nigel about his journey towards MDS, his previous running experience, tackling cancer, and, to start with, that first meeting with Doug Richards. Okay, we're underway with the Running Tales podcast. I'm here at Arrow Valley Park Run with Nigel Watson. And Nigel, we kind of know each other through a mutual friend, Doug Richards, who's been on the podcast a couple of times. Do you want to just first of all say how you met Doug and what the reasons behind that were?
Yeah, well, Doug's a bit of a local legend here in Redditch, and everybody knows him for his running adventures. I think our connection came through an interest in Marathon de Sable. It's always been a bucket list race for me. And as many books as you read and as many videos as you watch, I don't think you can ever get the real true story as to what it's going to be like unless you speak to someone that's done the race. Knowing that Doug had done that back on the 14th edition in 1999, obvious thing was to get in touch with him, and it all really started with a cup of coffee back in early 21, and I think that's where my journey started.
But you were hit around about the same time with what seemed like a setback that may put MDS out of the question.
Yeah, it's always been a bucket list item, but unfortunately, following Ironman Wales in 2018, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I think when anybody gets that diagnosis, it comes as an immediate shock to you, but you go one of two directions. You either let it control you or you control it, and I think that almost charged the batteries further to make sure that I could get through MDS, hence the meeting with Doug to get that thing started.
And what were you feeling at the time? What was the conversations with your doctors, the conversation with Doug? Was it all quite positive? Yeah, you've got this diagnosis, but you can still go, you can still keep running? Because I guess the first thing was, am I going to be able to run at all?
And that was one of the first questions really to the consultant that I saw. My running and my sport are really, really important to me. I've got a real positive attitude towards life, so this was never, ever going to meet me. The big challenge was, how would it affect me physically? And the view of the consultant was, you know, if you can continue to run, healthy mind, healthy body, just keep doing so. And I think that gave me that renewed confidence that perhaps MDS was achievable. And then as soon as I'd spoke to Doug, it was head down, we're going to do this.
We'll get on in a little bit onto how that journey towards MDS went, but I just want to touch a little bit on your previous running, because you didn't come into that challenge as a running virgin, did you? There's quite a lot of running behind you.
No, I'm 67 now, but I've been running since sort of mid 20s and done marathons all my life and various other sports, football, martial arts. In 2012, I got into Ironman triathlon. Which was a big challenge for me, as I'd never been in the sea in my life and I couldn't really swim. So probably not an ideal choice of where to go next, but went through that. I've now completed 4 full Ironman, over 30 halves, represented Great Britain 6 times. So I have got quite a sporting background, albeit at an amateur level. And then that lent itself to, what do I do next? When you've done a marathon, the obvious answer is, well, an ultra. So that's how we headed towards MDS.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, because we were chatting earlier and you were saying you sort of played football to a decent level, and that was probably your number one love. Mm-hmm. For running, for you, was that also a love, or was that something to get fit to play football?
I think running has always been an interest to me. I was a goalkeeper when I played, and I always liked to feel that I could.
Not much running at all.
not much running at all, really. But I always sort of set myself this target as being as fit as the rest of the team, and I was always known for sort of trying to do that. Took up marathons, and I think in life I always look, I've got this challenge, what can break me? And that's where the marathons first started, and it just developed from there. And I've done them all my life, and it's sometimes it's the solitude of it. You know, I don't run with music. I don't train too often with friends. You know, I go on long distance runs by myself, and it's just the solitude. Whatever problems life's throwing at you, a run can cure it.
We'll go into the ultras again. We'll talk about that a bit more. But is that even more so for an ultra when you're out there for 50 miles or 50k or whatever it is? You can really get some proper solitude going.
Oh, definitely. You know, my wife says to me, "What do you think about when you're on these runs?" And I can honestly say, nothing. You know, you can just switch off and you can just forget everything that life's throwing at you. It's a chance to clean the mind.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm not going to let you get away with just casually throwing in there that you represented Great Britain. tell me what that's all about.
So, Ironman triathlon is different distances. There's a full Ironman and there's a half Ironman. And through the various half Ironman triathlons I've done, I had an opportunity to put myself forward for qualification to race for age group GBR. And in 2015, which was 2 years after my first triathlon, I managed to make the GB squad, and then I represented Great Britain for 6 consecutive years after that. Highest position I ever got was 2nd in Great Britain and 8th in Europe. And that basically is a 1.9 kilometre swim, it's a 56-mile bike ride, and then it's a half a marathon on the end. I really love that, love the team elements of it. You know, it's completely different to being isolated on ultra running. But yeah, it's been something I've been really, really proud of. I'm old school, old fashioned, and I think representing your country is something big.
Yeah, definitely. And particularly from a start where you say you've not really been in the sea, you couldn't really swim. How did you tackle that? Was that just practice, practice, practice?
Well, it all went back to just after the 2012 Olympics. An old boss said, I'm doing one of these triathlons. Do you fancy doing it with me? And never heard of one. I could swim probably 25 metres, and the swim was a 400 metre swim. Hadn't been on a bike since my paper round as a child, but could run. And I really struggled in this first triathlon I did. And it was a Sunday morning, and on that same Sunday night, I went to our local swimming baths, found a triathlon club, said, teach me to swim. And that was in 2012. And then in 2013, it really took off. I started doing longer distance triathlons, and I started getting towards a GB squad. When I did my first GB squad in Mallorca, it was the first time I'd been in the sea in my life. When I walked into the sea for the swim, it was the first time I'd gone out of waist depth.
Wow.
Which was quite an interesting experience.
And quite unusual, because most people, I mean, I'm a terrible swimmer, but I've been in the sea, paddling around or whatever.
No, I'd been in a lake, and I'd got friends who took me out in a lake, and we'd had good moments and bad moments, but when we turned up for the GB squad, it was the first time I'd ever had to swim in the sea in my life. What didn't help was the sea was so warm. It was a non-wetsuit swim, and my wetsuit was my comfort blanket. So if you wanted all the challenges thrown at you in one day, they were certainly stacking up. And my wife was at the side, and she looked at me and she says, "You're white." She says, if you don't want to do it, just duck out. But I think when you got GBR on your chest, it sort of put your big boy pants on.
Yeah, it definitely gives you no choice to back down at that stage, I'm guessing. So you've obviously done lots of triathlons, lots of marathons, lots of running. Had you done the ultra distance before you decided to take on MDS?
Never done an ultra distance until we lost a friend locally who Doug's aware of, a lady called Lizzie Tovey, and the day of the London Marathon, we did a virtual and we ran from Birmingham. And the idea was we would run from Birmingham to the Arrow Valley Park here. We would meet Lizzie, who was sort of having treatments, and then we'd do the last 10K with her. But with the amount of looping that we did that day, me and a couple of friends ended up running 35 miles. And then we said to ourselves, actually, we've just done an ultra.
Yeah.
And then that's probably where that bit of it started, and then, started sort of extending the distance of our runs. done Adrian's Wall twice now, once unofficially. Coming to the end of COVID, a lot of the races were cancelled, so we just rocked up to Carlisle, ran over to Newcastle and came home, and then we did the official one the year after.
It's interesting that you mentioned Lizzie there. Lizzie spoke to my wife Michelle for the podcast as well, and I mean, we talk about Doug as a legend of Arrow Valley Park Run. Lizzie really was, wasn't she?
She was, and I think, you know, I didn't have as close a relationship with her as Doug did, but I think she just touched everybody's heart who she met. And you'll have probably noticed today that I always run in one blue sock and one pink sock. The blue sock represents prostate cancer. The pink sock represents breast cancer, and that's for Lizzie. So wherever I go, I'm known locally for my blue sock and my pink sock. And if anybody goes, why the socks? Firstly, it lets me say to people, if you're over 50 and you haven't had a PSA test, please have one, because that's how they can find prostate cancer. And then the pink one, obviously, just to make sure people are getting tested for breast cancer. I think as men, we're not good going to the doctors. I found out I had prostate cancer as a complete chance. I was ill in Ironman Wales, and they sent me for a blood test, and the doctor said, when was the last time you had a PSA test? I'd never had one. Had a blood test on the Friday, 8 o'clock Monday morning, had a phone call, the doctor saying, could you come in and see us? I said, we think you got prostate cancer. And as it was, I had. And I think that's just indicative of how important it is that you get tested.
Yeah, definitely. We had a chap on the podcast, I think it was towards the end of last year, Tony Collier, who is an incredible runner, incredible marathon runner, and he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I think because he was feeling constantly tired and constantly injured and so on while running, and that's what led to him being diagnosed. But he talks very eloquently about the necessity and the importance of getting tested, and he also talks about what a benefit exercise can be to helping prostate cancer.
Well, when I was first diagnosed, I think obviously if you're the person that has it, you deal with it in a different way. Your family look at it differently. They sit on the outside and they can't really influence it. And they were concerned. I think I'm stupid at times for some of the stuff that I do. And one of the obvious questions to the consultant was, do I need to rein back what I do? And he said, no. He says, you'll never get rid of it by doing what you do. But having a healthy body and a healthy mind, it's got to help you fight it. And he's encouraged me all the way through. I mean, when I tend to see him now, his first question is, so what have you done stupid since the last time I saw you? So, got a bit of a reputation with him now. But no, I think keeping yourself healthy just gives you the best chance of fighting it, and getting tested is absolutely critical.
And if you don't mind me asking, what is the sort of the diagnosis within your diagnosis? Is there a set time, or are you able to sort of battle this one or to successfully?
So probably fortuitously. I had the operation back in 2018, and I had my prostate out. I had a prostate removal, and unfortunately they didn't get it in time and it spread. But they could never find where it had spread to, and for the last 3 years now I've been having 6-monthly MRI scans. And finally, this April, they found where it was. And if you tried to take the positive out of every situation, it hadn't metastasized, it hadn't gone to lymph nodes, and it was still local to the prostate area. So that was a real, real positive. So at the moment, I'm 19 days into 33 days of radiotherapy. So, touching wood, the consultant thinks that where it is, and with the radiotherapy that I'm having, I should be able to get rid of it. So we'll find out end of December, I think beginning of January time, how that's gone. But at the moment, I've got no other thought than we're going to get rid of this. Right from day one, I've been trying to show this on Boss. It's not influenced my life. It hasn't changed my life. I still do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Well, that sounds like fantastic, potentially really positive news. So definitely be keeping everything crossed for you. I just wanted to ask one more question on you kind of spreading the message of what people do, because we were again talking earlier and you mentioned that you've lumbered yourself with a talk that's going to make you almost as nervous as sitting by the edge of the sea.
Very much so. My boss at work, Phil Riley, has been a real big support for me through this, and he thinks that I think the way that I've approached it is quite motivational. And at work, I've been asked to do some motivational speaking, and the teams have been quite positive about that, listening to my story. And then sort of Phil, my boss, said, perhaps you'd like to come and do it for my cricket club? And I said, yeah, of course, no problem. That sounds really, really good. It now turns out the audience could be around the 150 mark. So I think that's going to be a little bit nervous, as you say, like walking into the sea for the first time. And then once I've done his cricket club, we're following up with a tennis club that I think's got 50-odd members. And I think the idea behind it is it's not to do a talk that's about me, but it's to share my story and hopefully some of the ways I motivate myself to deal with the issues that life's throwing at me. And then he seems to think that's a good message for the two audiences that we're going to take it to. Me personally, where do I get my motivation? I look at the likes of Doug, from people like Lizzie. There's always somebody in a worse situation. I think whatever life throws at you, you just try and find the positives in it.
So you'd had your, let's go kind of back to the start again. You'd had your meeting with Doug. The Marathon des Sables was firmly in your sights. How did the training go and how did the event ultimately go? Because I think there was another hiccup along the way, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. I was originally intended to do Marathon des Sables in April 2022. Decided that this was serious. Having spoken to Doug, you really needed to prepare for this. It's not just turning up and doing the run. The thing will eat you. So I got myself a coach, Matt Bucks, and we put a structured training plan in place. And a number of the runs that were part of that, for my 65th birthday, I ran around the border of Rutland, which was 68 miles. That was my 68th birthday present to myself, with the guy who I did Marathon des Sables with, Chris Blackwell Frost. We did Adrian's Wall. That was a 72 miler. And then probably as my last long run, I took on something called the Lap, and it's a run around Lake Windermere.
And a friend of mine's just done that, yeah.
I got halfway round. I was coming down Wandsfell and fell. Landed awkwardly, thought that felt a bit sore. Thought nothing of it, carried on with the run. Got back home, to all intents and purposes was okay. Did a marathon. And then 3 or 4 weeks later, we did the Autumn 100. And I got 75 miles into the Autumn 100 and I've never been in so much pain in all my life. So I decided to see a consultant to get a diagnosis, and I'd got a 2-inch split in my femur.
Wow.
Which was a concern because this is in October and I've got Marathon des Sables in April. Saw an excellent guy who's a bone specialist, Stefan Kruszek. And he said, I think we can fix this. Didn't need any surgery. We overdosed me on calcium for about 2 months. No running, no cycling. All I could do was swim. So I was doing 3-5K swims a week in the local pool. The lifeguards were just stopping me occasionally going, how many laps have you now done? Become a bit of a local there. So I started running again on the 2nd of January with a real concern that I wouldn't be ready for Marathon des Sables in April. It was quite an intense training period. We had to shorten it. And history now, but I was ready by the time we come to fly out to Morocco. It wasn't easy. The training was intense. It was hard compressing it to such a short time scale. But I think you look at the end game and say, what am I trying to achieve here? So there's no way anything was going to stop me getting there.
So the million-dollar question, how was doing the race in the end?
Interesting. We had a really good first 3 days. We were getting through the marathons in about just over six hours, which sounds a long time to any of you marathon runners that are listening into this, but in heat of 40 degrees plus, it is a real challenging environment. We came to the long day, which is day 4, which was 90 kilometres this year. It was one of the longest stages they'd had. We also picked the worst year ever to do MDS. It was 56 degrees heat on the long day. I got 12K in. And I just said to my running partner, I just don't feel well. I sat down against the wall and spent the next 45 minutes in and out of consciousness. I was just suffering from heat stroke. Luckily, the medics were so busy with so many other people suffering from heat stroke, they didn't get to me for quite a while, and I'd started to come round and they let me carry on. And that was sort of 12K in. So the actual 90K took us 23 hours 45 minutes, and I can honestly say it was the longest day of my life, but the most fulfilling one when we finished, because we started in the morning, we ran through the day, we watched the sun go down, we went through the pitch black of the night, we watched the sun come up in the morning and finished. It was just an absolutely amazing experience.
And what is it that keeps you going in that moment? Because you're only 12k into a huge event, the longest day. It's 56 degrees. I mean, there must be a part of you that's going, I'm not going to be able to do this. I've got to pull out. And how do you just go, no, I'm going to keep going and going and going?
There's probably three things. Firstly, at my lowest point in the race, when I did consider, can I carry on, I switched my phone on, and I've just had two grandchildren, twins, and they came up on the screen. And I just thought, who wants a granddad is a failure? And it does give you a real shot in the arm. And then overnight in camp, you get messages that people who are back home are sending through to you. And I had so many messages saying so many things that I didn't think were deserved. I just think, how can you let them down? How can you go back and say, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't finish? And I suppose the third bit is, there's just something in me that I never give up.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's if I could bottle it, I'd be a millionaire. But I think if you've got that inner drive, it's just something that keeps you going.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like it's obviously something that's kept you going through and probably been developed by triathlons and marathons and ultras and battling the cancer as well.
I think it's just part of your DNA. You know, you're a runner, and you know Doug's been with us, and he's a runner. It's just something that you can't train in. It's in you or it's not. And I'm sure on this podcast, you know, you interview some seriously good pro runners, and they'll tell you, you know, in those people, it's there, and it's not something that's drained. It's just something that's always been there, and it's made them what they are.
Yeah, I think so. And we tend to find it with all the runners that we speak to, whether they are, you know, somebody who is doing a marathon in 7-8 hours. We've spoken to people who are doing that. We've spoken to people who do their first 5K after having problems with addiction or whatever. And they all suddenly find this kind of drive, and running is the thing that helps them to continue it and give them that aim.
Mm. And I think it's right. And, you know, I say I've... You know, I've got my cancer, which I'm fighting. You know, I had low points in MDS. Whatever life throws at you, everybody finds something that's their escapism, something that gives them that recharge of the batteries. And for me, it's always been sport, some form of physical activity, and that's just what drives you on. You know, that's what you fall back on. You know, when the going gets tough, what keeps me going? Yeah. And however bad a day you've had, go out and have a run. It'll clear your head.
So what's keeping you going now? What's next?
Well, I was due to be doing Lady Bower Reservoir Ultra tomorrow, which is 50k, but my running colleague has cracked three ribs, and I'm going through my radiotherapy, so we've deferred that till next year. At the moment, the only things that I have in the calendar are, I've got the Weymouth Half Marathon in March, I've got the Manchester Marathon in April, I've got a 105 miler in June, which is the Five Rivers Ultra. It's a new one out on the East Coast. And then
I love how you mentioned the half marathon first and then slowly came round to the 105 miler.
Well, we're building up from that, actually. Hopefully next autumn, I've got two sons of a good friend of mine who have been diagnosed with a dementia gene that sadly took their mother in their early 50s. So next autumn, they're looking to run from John O'Groats to Land's End to raise money for Alzheimer's awareness. So at the moment, body willing, I'm hoping to run every day of that with them. So that should be 1,000 miles, and we think it will be over sort of 35 days. So there's still stuff in there. I've said to my family I wouldn't do MDS again. I'd go back in a heartbeat, but I have to be fair to my family. It's, you know, having done it once, having ticked the box, I think that's gone now.
And was it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Yes, without a doubt. Both physically and mentally. It took me to the limit. I'm really, really proud to have finished it. I think it stretches your boundaries. It takes you beyond things you think you're capable of, both mentally and physically. And I think you come back with a different respect for yourself.
Well, Nigel, well done on doing that. Well done on all your other running. Good luck with the battle against prostate cancer. I'm pretty sure you're going to come through that one as well. And thank you so much for joining me today on Running Tales.
Thank you very much. Thanks for speaking to me. And just one final message. Any man out there who's over 50 who's listening to this, please consider having a PSA test. It's a blood test, not a physical examination, and it's the early check for prostate cancer. To everybody else, good luck with your running.
Superb, thank you.
Thanks again to Nigel Watson for joining us on this week's Running Tales podcast, and to you for listening to his incredible story. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and if you did, we'd really love it if you were able to leave us a review or a rating wherever you listen. I'd also suggest you go back and have a listen to those previous episodes we did with Doug Richards and to Lizzie Tovey's chat with Michelle. I'll make sure that the links to those are in our show notes. Thanks again for joining us this week, and I'll be back again next week with another Running Tales podcast.